One of the good things to come out of the COVID pandemic was that it accelerated research on a lot of fronts, including vaccines and deeper knowledge about the immune system. Internationally, there were some spectacular treatment trials, like the enormous recovery trial in the UK, which used electronic records in the National Health Service to recruit massive numbers of people with COVID and discovered early on that hydroxychloroquine didn't work and that a $6 a day steroid, dexamethasone, reduced death rates by 20%. In Australia too, there was a substantial flurry of clinical trials, but an analysis out today in the Medical Journal of Australia has shown a disturbing degree of poor science, waste, and what could only be described as selfish behaviour on the part of researchers. Professor Angela Webster is a clinical epidemiologist at the University of Sydney's National Health and Medical Research Council's Clinical Trial Centre, which did the study. Welcome to the Health Report.
Thanks for having me.
What did you do in the study?
Well, we wanted to have a look at the kind of activity and research that was going on focused on COVID in Australia. And so we looked at the Australia and New Zealand Clinical Trials Registry and also clinicaltrials.gov, which are registries which capture clinical trial activity. Over 95% of the trials that go on happen in Australia are registered on one of these. And we looked for the evidence of COVID trials that were recruiting patients in Australia and decided to examine what things about those trials, the way that they were focused, what they were going to do about data sharing, what they were actually delivering.
And what did you find?
We found between January and November last year, we found there was 1,600 over 1,600 trials, and of which 1,100 were recruiting in Australia. And of those, about 68 were trials on COVID. 56 of those were targeting COVID directly, and another 12 were looking at other effects of the pandemic, such as impacts on mental health.
And there were
I was going to say, and of those, we found that most of those were only four were finished of those trials. The others were either recruiting at the time or planning to recruit patients.
And when you looked at the design was wanting.
To a certain extent, yes. We know that there are certain innovations that can be used to deliver research quickly. And there were some innovations that that trialists had used. They'd used innovative ways of recruiting patients, digital ways. They'd used telephone and video calls where normally they'd do things face-to-face. And there were some other innovations in the way that the things they were testing, like nanoparticles for delivering vaccine, that's very cutting edge, and some other innovations. But innovations in the fundamental design of the trial were lacking. We know that we can use some statistical techniques which allow, called adaptive design trials, which allow you to change up the intervention you're delivering, the drug you're delivering, and adapt to evidence that shows maybe some things are more promising than others and drop the ones
which
that
is
are...
Which is what the British did in the recovery trial.
Exactly. We found only two of the trials in Australia were using adaptive design. So the innovation in the way that trials were carried out and fundamentally designed was really disappointing.
And they were too small often to actually find the answer that they were looking for.
Exactly. Like the average sample size in these trials was 150 patients that the trials were aiming to recruit. Whereas we know, for instance, the trial you mentioned in the UK, looking at steroids for COVID pneumonia, needed over 4,000 people to show a difference in mortality. The trials that were happening in Australia were really small, and they also often weren't measuring the things that really matter, what we call the core outcomes. And we found only half of those trials measured mortality.
And gobsmackingly last year, I still found people doing study trials into hydroxychloroquine when we knew it was a useless drug.
We found over six of those, yes. Although I have had a quick look in the registry since we finished this research at Christmas time, and it's only just being published now, so there's some delay there. I had a look at the update, and many of the hydroxychloroquine trials that were being undertaken in Australia have now been abandoned. But that represents some waste in the effort, of course.
Well, talking about waste, have you got any sense of the funding?
We own about 70% of the trials we looked at had no form of commercial funding at all, which suggests that they were either from philanthropic or government sources. We couldn't analyse further than that. But we did find that a rather disappointing commitment to sharing data beyond the end of the trial. By sharing data onwards, I mean, the International Committee of Medical Journal Editors says that sharing data is an ethical obligation because it allows you to maximise the value of the research you've undertaken by on sharing the data so it can be reanalysed and get some really granular findings about who might benefit or be harmed from certain interventions or approaches. And we found that over 80% of the trials had not declared a commitment to share their data, and about 70% actively said they weren't going to share their data.
What's going on there? That's really disappointing. What is going on there? I mean, they bang on, the National Health Medical Research Council has been banging on for years about what a wonderful collaborative research community we've got.
Yeah, you're right. We had a look. We had a look at some of the reasons, and there is some confusion. About half of the trials gave no reason at all for why they wouldn't share their data. Some, about another 20%, had a mixture of reasons, such as worrying that they could do this whilst protecting the participant privacy, so worries about protecting the privacy of the participants in their trials. Some stated that they lacked ethical approval to on-share their data. And some...
So those are pathetic reasons. You know, they're de-identified data, and you've just got to submit to the ethics committee. I mean, really...
Well, you'd think that it could be built into the trial. I think in some of the speed of trying to get trials going, people were forgetting that they had a commitment and a duty to maximise that public investment in their research. So on-sharing data is an incredibly important part of that, but often an afterthought by many trialists, sadly.
So presumably, you know, with so few trials completed and many still recruiting, and there's already a high failure rate in clinical trials in Australia in terms of getting them off the ground, not a good sign. Now, was there a gap in what they were studying? I mean, were they missing research?
I mean, that's a very important point. We found that most trials focused on drug interventions and pharmaceuticals with a limited amount on other supportive strategies. But what we really found the gap for was there was no trials of public health messaging or health service delivery and the number that were targeted particularly vulnerable populations. So those at highest risk of bad outcomes for COVID. That was only in 10% of the trials. But there was the public health messaging was entirely absent. And given the way that the pandemic has played out in Australia, generating evidence quickly for public health messaging and targeting those most vulnerable would have been the most valuable to Australia.
Hopefully some lessons learned. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Professor Angela Webster is a clinical epidemiologist at the University of Sydney's National Health and Medical Research Council's Clinical Trials Centre.